हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय जी हरि भव
महाराज की
हरि
सब
भव
से
हरि भव
पहले
जानी थाय बस। ओके सो देन ब्रह्म संहिता इन टेक्स्ट 37 The Gopis and the 64 Arts. This is from the verse Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Bis. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, Nija Rupa Taya, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency, possessed of the 64 artistic activities, in the company of her confidence. Sakis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. So then, now, for those curious about the supreme abode and the divine exchange of rasa between its inhabitants, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur provides a privileged glimpse. First, however, he gives some background in rasa tattva. The vibhava extension of that rasa, mellow quality, is twofold, namely alambhana, prop, maybe proper. Oh no, maybe it means the alambhana, the props. Okay. And udipana, stimulation. Okay, that's interesting, looking at it in the context of the drama. Okay. Of these, alambana is twofold, namely ashraya, supported, and vishaya, support her. Ashraya signifies Radhika herself and the extension of her own form, and vishaya means Krishna himself. Krishna is Govinda, Lord of Goloka. The gopis are the facsimile ashraya of that rasa. With them, Krishna indulges in eternal pastimes in Goloka. Nija Rupataya means with the attributes manifest from the ecstatic energy. Yeah, it means that Srimati Radharani then is taking the position, you know, the essential position of the Haladini Shakti. Because the whole point of the internal potency is Krishna's pleasure. All right? It means the Icha Shakti means it's about Krishna's desire, what Krishna wants in that. And that means then him tasting the ecstatic rasa of divine love between himself and the devotees. Then of that, then the conjugal rasa, and then the essence of that will be then Srimati Radharani's interaction with Krishna. So this aspect of that, that being the essential point, just like the essential point of, you know, Godhead, then is the his Bhagavan feature, because then we see is that the features of Brahman and Paramatma are, you could say, supportive features or secondary features of the Lord, in which they are creating the environment and the activities and results you can get within that environment for the support or expression of rasa. But the expression of rasa is actually the main point. It's not about anything else. So being that the rasa is the main, then the pleasure that's gained by the devotees in that association then will naturally be, that will be the essential point. So Radharani is taking that mood. So we see Vraja Radha then takes that feature. And Krishna then within Bhagavan, then the feature of Bhagavan, meaning that it's not Bhagavan in connection with his wonderfulness or his grandeur, but it's his sweetness, right? So then it'll be, you know, Bhagavan means this, the form of the transcendental form of the Lord and his pastimes with the devotees. But we see that there are those devotees that are worshiping him within just the wonderfulness that he has, Shantaras. You know, that in other words, it's like it would be seeing the Brahman aspect in the context of the Lord. It means that the Lord himself is the all is how he is everything. So they see it's how it's the person who's everything. Then you have the going up from there, then that's what's expanding from the what do you call it? The activities in that would be going on, you know, when, then you have the feature of the majesty that's there. So he's God, right? So you'll see that all the way up to Braj. And Vaikuntha is just purely he's God. Therefore, you only have the Shanta and the Dasya Rasas. Then when you get into Goloka, then he'll take on the mood of the human pastime. So in Vaikuntha, his mood is I am God. But in the Goloka, then he'll take on the mood of, if it's in majesty, that he's the son of Vasudeva Devaki. And if it's in just in sweetness, then he's the son of Mother Jashoda Nanda Baba. Then you have within that, so we said that's, the, you know, Bhagavan of the three features. And then within that is Bhagavan without the context of him as Paramatma or Brahman. Then you get the Braja pastimes. But then within that, then you see is that the Sandini Sambit Ladini, right? Then giving their influence, then the Sambit, no, Sandini, then it expands all the Shantaras Bhaktas. The Sambit expands the servitor friendship and parental. And then the Ladini expands the conjugal ras, right? And so then that will then take on there. So again, of it'll be Bhagavan, Bhagavan, Bhagavan. Then within that, you're going to see is there's the aspect of the right wing and the left wing. Because the right wing is I belong to Krishna, and the left wing is Krishna belongs to me. And so then Radharani takes on that flavor, which gives the, you know, the most intensity that is there. You know, that'll have greater intensity. Because if there's possession, there's the idea you'll deal with it, you know, how you see is best. While the I belong to Krishna, it's always going to be in line with what Krishna sees is best. Though it's going to be very wonderful, you know, it's going to be between, because it has the Parakya aspect. It'll be like the queens in Dwarka, because it'll have the Swakya aspect. So then they have that sense of, you know, that they're theirs, but it's half-half. Here it's completely about Krishna, so it'll have that more intense. But then when you take on the left wing, it'll take even more intensity than that. And so we just see that it gets down to the mood that Krishna's taking becomes more and more essence. And therefore we see Radharani, her position is that of the greatest essence. And then of that we see is all the other gopis are extensions of her bodily form. Right, says here, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. So, in other words, the relationship of Krishna with Radharani, that mood like that, then that is what goes out and permeates all the other gopis. So we see in there that the you have the general gopis, then they'll have that basic form of Mahabhava. Then Radharani's group. Means other than Radharani, but everyone in her group, all the sakis and maid servants and that, they're on the second level, the higher level of Mahabhava. But then Radharani's on that highest form of Mahabhava that only she manifests. So that aspect there, that's the feature that's going to, you know, more completely absorb Krishna, right? And so he's unlimited, she's unlimited, because she's the counterpart of his energy, right? She, resembling his own spiritual figure, Nija Rupa Taya. So he's the figure of the Purusha, she's the figure of the Prakriti aspect of the Lord. So we see we're going to get the highest manifestation there. And so that's the uniqueness that's there in Braja Radha Krishna. So Vrindavan, then that's going to be, you know, higher than what you'll get in Dwarka. But when you see is within Vrindavan, you have the feature of Braja, which means there's no aspect of, it's only pure sweetness. There's no majesty involved. So that brings it to there, to in the higher stage above Mahanarayan. And so then that's what Lord Chaitanya is offering. That's not that the other sampradayas don't deal with that. You can say it's, oh, but they deal with Radha Krishna worship, or they deal with spontaneous devotional service like that, or pure devotional service. Like with Ramanujacharya, then pure unalloyed, you know, pure devotional service is there. That it's just about the Lord. And then you see with, I think it's with Nimbarkacharya, then there's the feature of, it's just about Krishna, right? No other forms. And then with Vishnuswami, there's the aspect. And of that, it's just about Krishna. It's about Krishna following that mood of the gopis, right? But they're dealing with that. They're bringing one to Vrindavan, but not to Vraj. These are all the positions that are expansions of Mahanarayan. So then you're going to have the expansion of Vrindavan that's there. You're going to have the expansion of Mathura and Dwarka that are there, you know, in the second expansion. So what Lord Chaitanya is revealing is what's before Mahanarayan. So that Chaturvyuha, that's expanded directly from Krishna. And from that Sankarshan, then you get Mahanarayan, right? And so then that aspect, feature of Braj, then will be beyond that. So that's not open for the others. It's only through Lord Chaitanya that you can get to that platform. Right, so here is that this is very important, the Nija Rupa Tarya, with attributes manifest from this ecstatic energy, that Radharani is the ecstatic energy, and then all the others are embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, right? So they are you know, extensions from that. They are, you know, so therefore that it has the personal aspect, the Bhagavan aspect. And so then they're going to be extensions of her form, but it's still permeated and vitalized by the rasa, that rasa coming from Krishna in his relationship with Radharani. In other words, they're inspired by Krishna's conjugal rasa as it relates to Srimati Radharani. Right? Well, that makes sense. So it'll be subservient to that. So they may have the mood of being also sakis in which they personally interact with Krishna, or they may be those nitya sakis, which they don't. They only support Radharani's interaction with Krishna. Like that. But in any case, what they're tasting is Krishna's relationship with Radharani. Does this make any sense? Yeah. Okay, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati then shows how the ecstatic energy manifests itself in the 64 activities and fine arts and crafts listed on the next page. Okay, all these arts manifesting their own eternal forms are ever visible in the region of Goloka as the ingredients of rasa. And in the mundane sphere, they have been unstintedly exhibited in the pastimes of Braja by the spiritual chit potency, yoga maya, right? So they're ever visible. They have their own eternal forms in the spiritual world. And in the mundane sphere, they're exhibited in the pastimes of Braja by the spiritual chit potency of yoga maya, right? And so, and then, yeah. The divine sportive potency fills the hearts of his paraphernalia. With appropriate spiritual sentiments in conformity with the will of Krishna, Brahmasamhita 537 purport. So these, in other words, these arts themselves are conscious, and they are then permeated with this the divine sport and the chit potency of yoga maya. Then she instills the appropriate spiritual sentiments in conformity with service to Krishna, right? So they all are perfectly there, but the arts can be used to please Krishna. And so we're seeing them in the context of the conjugal rasa, what Srimati Radharani knows, right? But you'll see as some of these features of these rasa, these arts are used by the other rasas also, but then they will be, what's the word he uses? They will be filled, the hearts of the paraphernalia, with the appropriate spiritual sentiments in conformity with the will of Krishna. So then when he's interacting with any of the other rasas, or Mother Jashoda, the cowherd boys, the servants, the cows, then those arts being manifest will be appropriate for Krishna's pleasure in interacting with those rasas, right? Does that make sense? Then these will come down. The point is here, it's we're interested in that. Material world is a reflection of those. So therefore then, Mahamaya will then, be empowering those, which then will act, the mechanics will work the same. In other words, the concept of music, the concept of cooking, it's the same here as it is in the spiritual world. Spiritual world is the original, and that is what's reflected here. So cooking is the same. Mother Jashoda, there's a fire. On the fire, you put a pot. In the pot, then you put the ingredients that you have cooking, and you're going to stir them around. Pots will have the same kind of context, that they're, closed and open at the top so you can stir and things like that. They have lids. The heat then creates a temperature. You can fry them. You can steam them. You can do all the different things. It all comes from there. But there, all these arts are imbued with this spiritual rasa that is there to please Krishna. So it's all been, they're perfect for the expression of bhakti that the devotees have. So they have that devotion to Krishna. And then in that devotion, then these aspects are manifest. They manifest nicely to bring out the very particular points of the flavor of their service to Krishna, right? While here, then they simply are bringing out, means the living entity thinks that by doing this, they're expressing their interest in the art and how good they are at it as an identity, or that by doing cooking nicely, they're going to be able to make arrangements that will further their particular position of enjoyment, how they identify themselves. Like you see in the corporate world, they'll take someone out to lunch at a very nice place, get very nice items. And in this way, by trying to please the other person, then you're going to get the deal that you want, right? Whatever it is that you're doing, or, in the family, then they're cooking to please the family members. So there's a nice family environment, the family feelings and experiences that are there. So all that will be going on. So you see, the arts themselves are empowered by the internal potency to be able to perform these. And so that means then here in the reflection, the external potency is empowering them, under Krishna's order, then that they can be the basis of rasa. In other words, these 64 arts are the basis for exchange of rasa, of relationships. Right? That's the whole thing. It's about, you're going to interact with Krishna, you're going to express the rasa. So it's not just sitting around, everyone sits there in yoga position, meditating, and then they just kind of exchange the feelings and all that, and all, like telepathy or something like that. That's not important. No one in the spiritual world is interested in such, impersonal concepts. Right? But here it's that they're going to do something to please Krishna and to express that the 64 arts are there so that you have various situations in which you can do something to express your love for Krishna. And they being empowered by Yoga Maya, the divine sport of potency fills the hearts of his paraphernalia with appropriate spiritual sentiments in conformity with the will of Krishna, right? So that then brings about that they can naturally carry these things. That's the advantage of the Vedic culture, is that it's so designed and imbued that it perfectly can be used to please Krishna. So that's why the Vedic culture is used. That's why it's there. The Vedic culture is a manifestation of the activities of the spiritual world in the material platform, in which the living entity who's interested in elevating his consciousness up to the platform of Anandamaya and serving Krishna and Bhakti, then can perform activities that are naturally able, perfectly able to carry those. Just like you want to wash clothes, you get a bucket. You know, you want to serve tea, you have a little teacup. You know, you want something else and you have, you know, a lassi, you have a big glass like that. You know, you have some hot drink, you have a mug. So it's each thing is perfect for carrying the particular aspect that's there, and each has its own mood. There's a particular flavor like that. If you're drinking a cup of tea, there's one mood. Drinking some other hot drinks, it's like that's a different mood. You're drinking, you know, a big something that's there for thirst and that in the summer, then it has a different flavor. And it's perfect for expressing that. So when Krishna creates the material world, then along with this comes all, because it starts from top down, it starts with Brahma, then the Prajapatis and the great sages. Then you come down, you get all the great, you know, the kings and all that of the universe. And then you get down to the citizens and all of the living entities. So starting from there, since it's about elevating consciousness in relationship to the Lord, therefore the Vedic system is the perfect system. So that's why then it's recommended, because it's the best system to express. You can use other aspects or other features of the cultures around the world, but the problem is they don't necessarily express it as well as the Vedic. If it's in line with, then that's fine. But if it is not in line with the Vedic concept of what you're trying to accomplish here, then it will give an inferior experience. That's just the way it is. You know, you want to go out for a nice drive and, you know, we get, let's say, a wheelbarrow, you know, and then somebody can sit in the wheelbarrow and the other one can pick them up and then, you know, go around. It's not going to give the same experience if they got in a nice car that's designed for touring. Say what you want. Feel what you want. Bring up all kinds of ideas and concepts and ideologies and philosophies, what you want, but it's still a wheelbarrow. Whatever you want to say, maybe you can put some gold leaf on the wheelbarrow, you know, get out your WD-40 and spray the, you know, spray the ball bearings if it's got ball bearings, you know, like that. You can tie some little bells on the handle, you know, there that jingle when you pick it up and all that. You know, you can even put, you know, a snow plow in the front, you know, for moving aside, you know, how you say, jackals and other things that might annoy your nice stint, you know, frolic through the forest, but it's still a wheelbarrow. Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter that, no, but I grew up in this and this is us and this is all that and this is the modern, everything's changed and, you know, we have to move forward. And it doesn't matter what you say. It's a wheelbarrow. And it always has been, always will be. So Krishna in his kindness gave the Vedic culture, because it's so much more refined than that. It's meant, in other words, the Vedic culture is for the soul. Right? The Vedic culture is for the soul. And specifically, you know, and or at least one who's pious, right? At least religiously. All other cultures are for the body, the gross and subtle body. That's just the way it is. Because the Vedic and the material world is for elevating the consciousness. And so if you're using a culture from Anamoy Pranamoy, it's not designed for functioning at the level of Vijnanamoy Anandamaya. What the Vedic is, the Vedic can accommodate all four, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and Bhakti. While any other culture only focuses on, you know, a very limited aspect, not even necessarily a broad aspect of Pranamoya, right? Or Anamoya. You know, that's why you have the animals. This one lives in a hole. This one lives above the ground. This one lives in a tree. You know, this one lives in a hole in the tree. This one lives in this kind of tree. That one lives in that kind of tree. This one lives in, you know, in the sand. This one lives in the dirt. This one lives in the rock. This one lives on the top of the mountain. They only have a specific thing. The Vedic is designed that all living entities that fit within the human context, where they're trying to elevate themselves by following the laws of God, is the laws of nature, then they can all one, even though they may have different kind of interests and this and that, they can all cooperate together because the principle is the same and they all understand that principle. So the details of that are there will be the uniqueness of their various, you know, very kind of thing. Just like if you go to a house in Bengal and you go to a house in Punjab, you know, of a cultured family, the experience you'll get of them receiving you, sitting you down, you hosting you, feeding you, serving, you know, the meal, the discussions, and will be exactly the same as far as quality goes. The detail will be different. Bengal, they're going to give you rice, possibly, and if it's lunch, no chapatis. Or if you go to Punjab, it'll be chapatis, no rice. So in detail, you can say, oh, but they're so different. But the mood, the experience is the same. Right? Well, if you choose other cultures, then you're going to get a very different flavor in that. So instead of it being about the interaction that we have, and then the meal and the serving supports that interaction you're going to have in the West, where if it's what do you call it? It'll be about, what do you call it? That you have a form, a very formal form, and everything's done very nicely, and how nicely you can do, then others are comfortable. Yes, you know that, you're on this culture platform. So in other words, the external rules of it become the basis of whether you have a relationship or not. You know, it's more on that. And it's not necessarily that it's if you go into more older cultures, then it has some basis in trying to create the, you know, the interaction, like you have the nice table, and let's say it's a formal dinner, so they're going to put sitting on this side of the long table, it'll be man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, like that, you know, a person, their wife, you know, like this. And, you know, so one man on each side is two women, and one woman on each side are two men, and then exactly opposite you will be the opposite. So the man will be here, opposite will be a woman, right? And on her two sides will be two men. So that means the women on his side are facing men, and the men on his side are facing women. So the idea is that on two sides of you and in front of you is a woman, and for the woman on two sides of the men and in front is a man. So it's trying to create some difference in conversation and this and that and like that. But it's not that there's necessarily anybody doing anything for that. You know, some people may know the art of conversation and all this kind of thing, but it's not necessarily inherent that there's topics you should discuss or not, or that there may be underlying, but these things come farther down. While in the Vedic, then these are more in the front. So it's just a matter of, it's designed to nicely carry the interaction between the devotees and other devotees in their service to the Lord. And if you're then offering these things to the deity or appreciating them in the pastimes of Krishna, you can see how these 64 arts go in very nicely and perfectly support. So that's what they're for. In other words, the Vedic culture is for human beings. And outside of that, those are for those who are functioning, you know, socially, religiously, socially below the platform of human. Right? Means there's going to be some elements there that are coming from these arts. Because you can say, well, the arts are on the, you know, on the lowest platform. But the point is it's how refined they are and how are you using them for Krishna, how they're connecting to Krishna. What's the actual, how they mechanically means. Of course, the principles of how they function are going to be the same. But the detail of how they function, what's the purpose of them functioning, that's going to be the difference. So these things make a difference like that. So that's why then they're here and we're studying these 64 arts, because this is, you see in the pastimes of Krishna, it's always with the gopis, it's always going on in these contexts like that. And then here, okay, Srila Jiva Goswami points out further points. Jiva Goswami, okay, further, you know, points out the exclusive equality of each intimate exchanges, of such intimate. Quote, the word eva in the phrase Goloka eva indicates that such pastimes are not found elsewhere at all. Digdarshani Tika 537. So in other words, because you're talking about this level of rasa, it's not found anywhere else. It'll be in Goloka, it won't be in Vaikuntha, It won't be, you know, it won't be in the heavenly planets. It won't be in the earthly. It won't be in the lower. It means the arts will be there, but they're not empowered by the internal potency to carry that perfect mood for serving Krishna. It goes down in that way. So that mood of sweetness that's there in Braj won't be found in Dwarka, you know, won't be found in, you know, that won't be found because it's a mix of sweetness in that. And majesty in Vaikuntha is just majesty. Then you get into the heavenly planets and the higher brands that may have that element of a spiritual, you know, the, in Satyaloka, those four planetary systems, but it will still be mixed with the context of Gyan. Then you go down to the heavenly planets, it's mixed with karma, right? But pious, right? Proper. Then you got down to the earth, it could be either way. And then the lower planets, it's going to be, you know, connected, you know, the higher ones are going to be more connected with the, you know, more refined Vedic culture and all that, but simply for their own sense gratification. And the farther down you go, the more it just becomes more just about sense gratification. Right? We're good on the general concept of the arts? Yeah? Okay. Yes? Okay. Okay, so now we'll go, we'll read through the 64 arts themselves. Now you'll see is that the 64 arts, it's, you have general categories, but which features you'll bring out more depends upon the particular who's it for. Like for Krishna, what's mentioned in the Krishna book, in the Bhagavatam, then those 64 arts there will be more based on what, you know, one would be the aspect of the Kshatriya training. But also from the point of the aspect of the men or the boys, right? You know, what features they would be involved in, but also because it's the aspect of the Kshatriyas, how they would be using. Now you go into here, then it's going to be the gopis, right? And so the girls are going to be using it. And here we see is that it's going to be bringing out the aspect of the sweetness and everything like that. So it's, that's why we're saying is that Yoga Maya empowers these to carry, because the same art could carry majesty, could carry sweetness, could carry mundane sense gratification. So it just depends upon what you want. It's the same thing. Right? You have a glass. It holds liquid. I could have liquid that's been offered to the deities. I could have liquid that's not offered to the deities. I could put in it something in the mode of goodness. I could put something in the mode of passion. I can put something in the mode of ignorance in that glass. It's still the same principle of the glass holding liquid. So in other words, in the spiritual, in Goloka, and then here in Braj, then because here when they're saying, yeah, then it's going to be according to the gopi's service to Krishna. You know, and then the same principle comes down. When Mother Yashoda uses these arts, it'll be in context of her rasa. If the cowherd boys use them, it'll be context of theirs, the servants theirs. Then those in the Shanta rasa, it'll be, you know, context of their rasa. But it's all within Braja, Braja Bhakti. Then you go to Dwarka, then you're going to have, again, the five rasas. They're going to be using it, but it'll have that aspect of majesty. Mechanics are the same. How you fill up a glass with liquid, it's the same principle, right? The glass is the bottom, you know, you have the closed bottom and the sides, and then the open top. The top is up, and then you pour something in. Does that make sense? So it's the same. That is the same. Details will be different according to what you're pouring, how you're pouring it, why you're pouring it, and everything like that. Does that make sense? So you can say, no, it's totally different. No, the principle is the same. That's the point, is that the wonderfulness, because everything comes from Krishna, it all has that simplicity of the principle. Then the detail, it'll have unlimited detail. Because in the spiritual world, they're performing these aspects, but like I said, Srimati Radharani cooks for Krishna. She never cooks the same preparation twice. Now, one could look at it, oh, that means, okay, she cooked a cauliflower sabji, that means she never cooks it again. No, she never cooks it the same exact way. She could cook, the point is you can cook cauliflower every day for an eternity and slightly adjust it each time depending upon how much you know about cooking. Right? The more subtle it is, the more you understand the science and the science of the tastes and what you can do with them and the techniques, because you have all the tastes, you have the techniques, then you can vary and keep varying, and it's just creating unlimited. Plus, you have then the menu of what you have in there, what's in season, everything like that. So it's always, always adjusting. Yes, G.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it can be accepted, like it was explained some few days ago, that because in the spiritual world there is no past and future, that means the experience with some special food which Srimati Radharani cooked for Krishna, he is enjoying forever, because she is doing the new preparation to increase the
very good point. Yeah, because that taste is already there, so there's no need to cook it again, because that's the point of uniqueness. We were saying existence of something, that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining existence of something, that it exists, but it also has a uniqueness, right? It's different, because otherwise, if it's not unique, it's the same as what's already there, right? If you have a chair, if I have this, and I say, here's the this, you know, and then here's another one of this, but it doesn't have any difference. It's the same existence, so it doesn't have a uniqueness, you know. So it's like if you say, you're a magician, then I pull like this, and now I have two, right? You know. So the point is this: that you can tell that this existence and this existence are separate, right? Then you have its action and it has its purpose. So its purpose is to please Krishna. And its action is that, you know, it's being used in whatever form it is. So there's a particular action there, how it's eaten or how it's served or everything like that. But it's unique. So then what you're saying here is that uniqueness means he's already experiencing the taste of this one eternally. So now Radharani will cook in such a way that there's a slight difference, but it's just subtle, because Krishna is not gross like us. So you don't have to have a gross change in something. Right, it can be just like you can see is that you go into any you know community in India, you know, more aristocratic, you know, even just that they're good cooks. I'm saying aristocratic because they might have a little bit more left of the value of the cooking process, and they'll cook their own cuisine, but they'll always be making varieties and changes and everything like that. But they do those changes within their own cuisine. And they can get so much variety, right? So it's not that, okay, today we cook Gujarati, and then because we want variety, tomorrow we have to cook Punjabi. No, we can make variety by still cooking Gujarati, right? And then we can still make by Punjabi. Now, you may do like that, but the point is it doesn't have to, it's not a gross change, because some say, oh, you know, we would have to actually have all these Western preparations, because in the Indian preparations, you'll run out of preparations. So we have to include the Western preparations so that Radharani can get the variety that we talk about, as if she doesn't know cooking. And generally, the people that say this don't know cooking. I mean, my experience, maybe you can bring along, you know, somebody who knows all that. But I think when you get into it, those that really know cooking, especially the higher up they know, they can understand that just by changing something a little bit, you're frying something, you fried a little more or fried a little less. You know, just within frying it, there'll be a difference. Do I fry it with spices? Do I fry it without? I fry it, then put the spices after. I put the spices first, then fry it with that. Or I'm frying it, and then I put some while I'm doing it. All will give a different effect. You know, just like you see people be explaining how to make something, you know, like say cooking some bread, and each one has a different way they do it, and it all makes bread and it all works, and they all say, oh, we want, you know, nice risen and this and that and nice color and all that, and they're all getting it, but by all these different techniques. So the point is but there's a slight difference in them. One will have bring this out, one will bring that out. You know, and so because of that, there'll be some difference. You know, so these kind of aspects, then one has to appreciate that there is a refinement there, and Srimati Radharani is doing. You know, and it's not that what you have. And generally, you see is cuisines all over the world. They all have a basic concept of how they do things, and so there's some principles that are there in everything. Like everybody has a soup, right? Everybody has a kind of pancake. You know, everybody has a kind of, you know, all these things. Every cuisine has some aspect. It's just a matter of what they emphasize and what they would put together with what, you know. So to say as, oh, but this is Western, but where did they get it from? Like someone was just telling me, you have the, you know, in France, they, how you say, I don't know if it's croissant or whatever it is. It's something that you have to say in it. If it doesn't, you know, sound, resonate in your nose, it's wrong, right? And so the point is, it's there, but they were telling, but it's not from France. It's from Austria. But, you know, it's from when Napoleon came and conquered Austria, then somehow another being there, then the local bakers there, you know, I'm not sure along with, you know, if it was with Napoleon or that, then they developed their croissant. But then because it's him doing it, naturally it's a French thing and they take it back to France. Not wanting to throw any shade on them, but the point is, you know, it's known as a French, just like you have the pomme frites, you know, it's known as the French and the English French fries, but actually they originate in Belgium. But because France controlled Belgium and it's a part of the thing there, and it's a nice, you know, it's just like in any country, there's all the regions and each region has its own thing, but it's all considered from there. So as the empires go out and that, so, you know, by the principle of whatever you did control, it's eternally part of your scene, even though now your country's smaller, it's still yours. You know, it's a whatever, that sense of possession. So you're going to have that it's not from there. So that's the whole point, is you can say, no, but this is from here, you know. But it's not necessarily. Like anything you call American cooking, it's not from America. It's all from Europe or from South America, you know, or somewhere else, not from there. And even the European, that generally is coming from somewhere else also. Much of it, other than taking something, shooting it, and then throwing it on the fire and turning the thing like this so you get an even cook, then, you know, it's still going to be something, because all the other things come from somewhere else. Pepper, this, that, all the spices don't come locally. You know, they come from somewhere else. And so you're going to have all these things. The vault eventually goes back to the Vedic, you know, element like that. And when it's spread all over the world, these things to be going out. You know, it's just like the pomegranate. You have the local pomegranate in India, and then you have the Kabuli pomegranate, you know, that comes from Afghanistan. They're much bigger and everything like that. So depending on where it is, this comes from here, like, say, Nagpur, I think, is famous for tangerines that are really big size, like this big. You don't see them that big anywhere else. Most other places like this, like that. Ahmedabad then is for guavas. They have huge guavas and they're very nice like that. So every place has something that it's best here, and so then you want to get it from there, but it doesn't mean it doesn't go out and become part of the culture. So you're going to have all these things all over the place, and then, you know, like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj, thank
you. Yeah. So the variety is, but like I said, I think that's a very nice point, is that because Krishna is going to be enjoying the you know, the pleasure of the devotee offering that item to Krishna eternally, then you want to increase his enjoyment, so you will make a slight adjustment. It only needs a slight adjustment. It means you can have major adjustments also, but slight adjustments also, you know, like that. So you have major things, and then within those you have the subtler, and then within those you have subtler, like that, Radharani, because she is the embodiment of the 64 arts, and so she's the master of all of them, so she can unlimited, as Krishna is unlimited in his appreciation of the cooking, then she is unlimited in her ability to create the variety and difference of experience. So you know, one may say, well, how is that possible? But then that takes us back to the verse or two before. Yes, 34, inconceivability. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose toes alone, possessing inconceivable powers, avichintya tatve, are attained only after a billion years by multitudes of sages who discipline the mind and breath. So in here, then Jiva Goswami is remarking, the truth of the matter is that he is avichintya tattva, inconceivable. Skanda Purana and Mahabharata say, inconceivable states are not subject to material logic. The nature of the inconceivable, that it is beyond material objects. Right. So that's the point, is one may say, well, how is it possible? But that's the whole point of inconceivability. It's beyond. That, in other words, why have a word? If you can't conceive of it, means it's beyond your ability to apply logic to it. That's just what the word means. That's the logical presentation. It's just, it's beyond that. So you know, get over yourself. It's just, you know, oh, but I'm a, you know, I'm an intellectual, I'm a thoughtful person, I can understand everything. He says, no, you can't. I mean, everything has a limit. You know, Mount Everest is the biggest mountain that there is around, but it's still only a certain height. That's it. You know, Mount Meru starts from the lower planets, you know, going all the way up to Indra's place. And Indra's heavenly planets are on top of the bottom, right? Meru is upside down. So the big part's at the top, right? The point's down at the bottom, right? So at the bottom, then you have the talas of the seven lower planets, goes through the earth, then it goes up, and then the heavenly planets sit on the top. You know, it's a big wide area. And now that's a mountain. So any mountain that's anywhere else in the universe doesn't compare. So you can say, yeah, it's a mountain. That's the biggest around here. But then there's Meru. So in the same way is that, you know, one may be intelligent, and then there's what's beyond your intelligence, because your intelligence is finite because it's coming from matter. And matter can only be used in the context of matter. It can't be actually used beyond that. That's why without the chit potency empowering the intelligence, one can't understand. That's why it's inconceivable. And then Krishna reveals, now you can understand it or realize it, because he reveals it, not because, oh, I have such fine intelligence and I use my analytical ability to understand it and all that. No, there's no way that that'll work. One has to appreciate that there's a limit to anything on the mundane platform. And on the spiritual, it's unlimited, though it is personal. Right? It spiritually exists, it's localized, and it's personal. And how these three attributes work together, that's inconceivable. You know, like that. Yeah, good. Okay, the 64 arts. So then we have here, opening, the art of singing. Right? So then, because we have here one art of singing, two art of playing on musical instruments, three art of dancing, and four art of theatricals, five art of painting, right? So we see they have all connects. So the singing in that, then you have all the different ragas that are there, right? That, and, you know, then they have their, where they're coming from, because the notes themselves, there's an order, you know, what's the gap between the notes, because you have 22 shrutis, and then how many of those shrutis make up one note, because you have the note, you can have a little below it and a little bit above it, like that. And so what's the relationship between the notes? Because each one of those shrutis then gives a particular flavor, right? So, because it's all about rasa. So it's a particular emotion or mood or that's connected with a note, right? It, you know, in general. And then you have the subtleties you'll get when you mix. You know, it's just like you have these different things, but when you mix them, you get something else that's unique. You know, it's like you take salty, sweet, sour, and pungent, and put them together, you get a chutney. You know, a chutney or a chaat, or, you know, these kind of more snacky kind of things that go along with something, or just kind of, they're there to bring out some nice taste and all that, but they're not necessarily a meal themselves. So you bring out these different things and you combine and you get all these wonderful tastes. So then the art of singing then the main thing is how to express these different rasas and that that Radha and Krishna will be experiencing in their interactions, and then how that's put into the tonal qualities, because what they're interacting will be the different kind of flavors of rasa, which has all the different features within it, the anubhavas, the vibhavas, sattvika bhavas means there, and the sancha, what's it, the sanchari bhavas, right? So all those will be going along based on the stai bhava. And so then you take all those and you mix them in so many ways and proportions, because even if you have the same thing mixed, what's more and what's less, it makes a difference in the flavor, right? So then that aspect's going to be there, how to bring out all those different moods and flavors that they're experiencing or have experienced, and then you're going through and at a different time going through them again to bring out that remembrance or that experience again. But you know, you'll make some adjustments. Now in singing, then naturally along with that you have the art of playing on musical instruments, because the instruments then have to support the singing. Singing is the main, right, of the sound, you know, in music. Then the voice is the main. Instruments can either copy what, you know, mimic what the voice does, or simply give a backup for the voice. Like the veena, especially like the, you know, Rudra veena and, you know, Kachapi veena, Tritantri veena. These can, you can do things with it that you can do with the voice. You can bend notes, you can slide, you can do different things. So they can get they can be very much like the voice. And others then don't. They just give backup that is nice for that, right? Then it's the art of dancing, right? So then that naturally goes. If you're singing, playing in a musical instance, then there's dancing, like a rasa dance. There's going to be the gopis and Krishna are dancing, but then the others, the assistants, are going to be singing and playing on musical instruments, right? Now, if you want to put those together and perform a pastime aspect, then you get the theatricals, the art of theatricals, right? How to put all that together, what are the different features that are going to be there? Because in dancing, each movement is a mudra that signifies some particular aspect or flavor. And so there's a natural movement, how they go from one to the other and everything like that. And so that can also be done to create theater, where you're performing some pastime. You know, like you see Lord Chaitanya and his associates many times who perform, theatrical performances. Like that, and at Srivas Thakur's house, they might do a drama like that, and different devotees would take different parts and different roles in this drama in Krishna's pastime. Or we see Nityananda Prabhu when he was young, you know, him and his friends, he would always, with them, put together a drama doing something of Krishna's pastimes, right? And he'd do all the different pastimes, and the adults would sometimes ask, how does he know all these pastimes? Because it's not necessarily that they've necessarily discussed them, that he's heard them, or even if they had, they're a child, how would he remember all this? But that's, you know, because Lord Nityananda is Lord Balaram, so he knows all the past and he's been there. So he would just go through these because it's so nice to remember. So theatricals is a very nice way of remembering for yourself and others remembering how it's going. Then the art of painting. Right, you know, and that, and so then the painting goes together with, simple kind of village kind of painting up to very sophisticated kind of painting. So painting is basically you're dealing with the two, you know, these up down, you know, and sideways. It's only dealing with 2D, as we say. And then sculpting is 3D. And so you have to get all the different angles, you know, all 10 directions. But in theatricals, you only have to do one plane, right? So you're only getting eight directions on one plane. You're not doing that, therefore, in 360. So depending upon your painting style, it can just show one thing. Just like very typical thing is that you show a place from the top, right? let's say, and then you have that place, let's say that mandala, then has gates, right? So if the mandala is like this, the gate will be like this. But when you're looking at it from above, then you can't see the gate, so they put the gate down like that. So it looks like it's just flat on the same plane as the mandala. But you can see by the shape, it's a gate. So you know it's a gate. You can say, oh, but it's not realistic and this and that and so on. Things like that, you know, you can say so many things. But the point is you appreciate, no, it's being done in that 2D fashion and just being more simple in its presentation. But it gets the effect. The point is to get the effect that, oh, that's what's there. What a nice gate. What a nice thing. What a nice mandala. And it's to get the experience. But if you're experienced, no, it has to be real and all this and that. But same time as, you know, generally people who say that it's not real, much of their life is not real. But, you know, it's a good enough for them. Then six, art of painting the face and body with colored unguents and cosmetics. Right? So that's, you know, what we do, you know, we see, like, we call it, you know, the tilak or the gopi dots, or how to, you know, use chandan and that to draw nice designs and that might be on the face or on the body, you know, or that, you know, like they do, you know, whatever. You see so many times that they do nice things for Radha and Krishna like that. Seven, art of preparing offerings from rice and flowers. You know, how you say? And the point is that along with this means you're going to be understanding how to make the unguents and cosmetics, how you take them, how you grind them, what you use to get the colors and the fragrances, and how you mix them to get the consistency, how you put them on. You know, if you're putting them on, you know, with a stick, or you're putting them on, how you're putting them on. Or here we have the art of preparing offerings from rice and flowers, that you're doing like the mandalas and everything like that. It's rice flour. Either the rice flour is dry and then they hold it in their hand, you know, and just leave a little small hole out here. Depending on what they want to do, they make, you know, fine lines. They want to make a bigger line, they'll open a little bit and make, you know, dots and different things like that they can do. So just how to do that, or you do it wet, the rice flour is mixed with water, right? And then you put, you have a little like piece of cloth rolled up, you know, so it's kind of like a triangle like that, put it in your palm and that, and then you squeeze it. And by that, the liquid will come out and then it runs down your little finger. And by that, you can draw, you know, or some will do it the other way, put it here and draw with the main finger. It depends on how fine you want it to be. And so, you know, just the techniques of doing all those things. So we're saying here, the 64 arts, these are the main arts. But within that, then there's so many arts, like you're singing, you know, you're doing the notes and all that. But then how you do the note, the way you'll use the voice and approach the note and all that, all those will have techniques. So this will be the main area. And even these, you see, music will be one area. Aesthetics will be another area, like this. So there'll be... of this, basically, you can see it kind of in, you know, so many of these that you can, 64 can be in category, general categories they have within these. And then each one of these has details, and each one of those things has details. So it's just unlimited, basically, what you can get. So the 64 arts, that knowledge, and Radha, what she knows is unlimited, to give that unlimited experience to Krishna. Right. And then you're going to put flowers, you know, like that. And that, or you can also even do offerings from rice and flowers, means that the rice can be colored, right? And generally, even before, they would use the different flowers and different things to give colors. They would also, in the painting and all that, that it would be from flowers and minerals and all those, you color. And that way you can do, and also, even though you do the mandala, you can still put, you know, fresh flowers to decorate and all that together. And you know, depending on, we'll see what, although it says about wreaths here, so it won't be garlands. But, you know, for how you decorate with flowers, how you put things, so it can be the general, they could be along with those mandalas that you make in that, or they can also just be in another place, how you set up flowers and like how you do a vase, or how you do, you know, something, put flowers together in the corner, along the edge, or on a table, and some nice design like that. Then A, art of making a covering of flowers for a bed, right? So then you have the bed, how do you put flowers and everything the make it design and everything is very nice. Sometimes you see it in the Western society that big hotels, these, you know, very high-end hotels and that, and they do, you know, if there's a wedding party and that, they'll make the, you know, for the honeymoon, for the couple, then one of the things, they may put flowers on the bed and some kind of design like that, but they wouldn't know how to cover the whole thing. They just give some general idea, or they might use it like in the bathtub to put flowers and stuff like this and things. Or you see it in Vrindavan, when they do the boat festival, the courtyard's filled full of water, but they put flowers in there that makes a design. And it stays like that because there's so many flowers, they don't move. And then when the boat goes through, they move and all things like that. But it's a general principle, is you know how to make offerings of that and decorations with rice, either whole or in powder, you know, wet or dry, and you know how to do flowers and how to make decorations with that. But then here, you know how to do it on the bed, right? Yes, please.
Just wanted to clarify, if these arts are used in the Vedic culture, are they counted as part of karma?
Part of?
Is that, but if it's outside of that, is it counted as part of karma?
It means where the arts are defined and all that is in the Kama Shastra, mm-hmm. right? Because Kama Shastra means engaging the senses. Mm-hmm. Right? Nowadays, people just take it, Kama Shastra means just, you know, intimate physical interaction, but it means the whole thing with the senses. Because also in the Kama Shastra, they're describing how you keep the house, how you, you know, in season you buy all the different spices that grow in that season. Like at one part in the season, you have cumin seeds, right? And seeds last, the spices last for a year. They grow once a year, they last for a year. Just like rice grows once a year, a particular rice, and it'll last for, you know, some time, you know. So you buy it at that time. You have to know how much, okay, cumin, how much cumin do we use a day and over the month, and so therefore for the year. So you have to get that much. And at the same time, some of it will go bad, you know, bugs will eat some of it, this, that, and so many things. So you're going to get like that. And then how you keep them so the bugs don't get them, all this. And that's all described by the Kama Shastra. It just means arts, right? In the modern society, then they simply think of it as sense gratification. But it's no, it's all the arts that deal with engaging the senses, right? So that's going to be there. So it's described there. It comes originally from the Kama Shastra. Means it'll be defined in the Kama Shastra. That's where it's from. Just like medicine is defined in the Ayurvedic section, or you know, the Vastu Shastra will be coming from the Stapanaveda aspect, or warfare will become from the Dhanurveda, or you know, everything has its place of origin. Mm-hmm. But it's just, are you engaging in Krishna service? Are you engaging in a social thing? Are you engaging in a religious? Engaging in spiritual? Are you engaging in transcendental and devotion? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like cooking. It's one of the arts that's there, but we cook for Krishna as part of the thing. Mm-hmm. Part of the Pancharatri process, part of the Bhagavat process. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, and in the Veda, how you cook something for use in the sacrifice and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's broader than that, but it just means it deals with everything dealing with the senses. Mm-hmm. Then Arthashastra, everything dealing with profit and how socially everything works, that you get profit. Just like, let's say Arthashastra mentions you have a house and there's another house next door. You can't have windows opposite each other. If I have a window here, you can't have a window here. I have a window here, you have to put your window here. In other words, I can't look out my window and see in your window. You can't look out your see in mine. Now, why? Because if I can see in your window, you can see in my window, that's the basis of going to be social disruption, right? Neighbors are going to get upset. The ladies of the house are going to get upset. And, you know, you start family feuds this way. So if we're talking Artha, which means profit, that means no fighting. Therefore, Artha Shastra defines you don't have windows opposite each other. I'm going to take the water coming from my house, you know, from washing dishes and showers and all that, is going to run out, and I'm going to generally put it on the edge of my property. You know, it'll be away from where I'm staying, but I can't have it on the edge of the property that it affects the wall. If by that it affects the land and the neighbor's land, it makes their land wet or things like that, or makes their wall fall over, I can't do that. I can't say it's my land, I can do whatever I want. Yeah, you can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't bother the neighbors. Right? Because people say, no, my property, I do whatever I want. Yeah, but you can't disturb anybody else. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So, you know, Artha will define that. So it's much bigger than what people, because people say Artha just means, so how do you do business? No. The point is you do business. You make profit. What do you do with that profit? That's it. I got money. I just sit back and look at the piles of money. All these, you know, millionaires, billionaires, trillionaires, they just sit around this pile of money in the middle of the room. They just look at it all day. And after looking at it, and they give a sigh of, then they go out and make more, and they can bring more bar and put it on the pile, and then they just look at it again. That's all they do in their life, right? Isn't that standard? Just that's all business. That's all they ever do. No, they buy things with it. They have a house. They have their family there. They eat food. They have furniture. All that's part of Artha. You know, how it goes where to create the nice atmosphere, that'll be in Kama.
Yes.
But that you actually have these things and the rules judging that, and I got my sofa and that, your neighbors liked it, they can't decide after coming to the house that was a great couch that they take it with them when they go. No, that's not allowed. Therefore, I worked hard, I got the money, I got the house, you can't take it. The judicial system comes up. You know, what are the social codes? How do I deal? I have my family. How do I deal with your family? How do you deal with my family? That's all in that. So in other words, that's all part of Artha. Artha means I'm going to use the money for something, and therefore the laws governing everything that I use it for is also part of that. Does that make sense? You know, then in Manamaya, then it's going to be what are the laws of nature? What are God's laws? And therefore, you know, theistically, you honor that God's made these laws, and so therefore I follow it because God does. If I say, oh, but I follow the laws of nature, but without God, that's pranamoy and anamoy. That's all. Because the laws govern all four states. You know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's just a matter of, if I acknowledge that these are God's laws, that's why I follow them. Then you can elevate the consciousness more. And then you bring in the aspect of ritual and all these different things like that. Right? Then vidyanamoya, then what is, okay, the soul, what's the nature, how to elevate the consciousness of the soul, what environments it goes in. Therefore, then you see, then they have that simple, more detached, more renounced. So that's why the brahmacharis, vanaprasas, sannyasis live more simply. The grihasthas then live more broadly. Right? That's there, but it's in the realm of trying to engage in Krishna service. So it'll take on that aspect of what do you call it? The external environment will look like manamoy, but their consciousness is that I'm trying to elevate my consciousness here, be spiritual, make the house, everything connect to Krishna. So then it'll take on that platform of the jnanamoy, right? Now, for the brahmacharis, vanaprasas, sannyasis, the environment's more simple. It's easier to do that. The grihasthas have to be more aware. It can be done. You just have to be more aware. And then anandamaya means it's just about Krishna. So all those things that are being used, engagement with the senses of the body, the mind, and the intelligence, like that, all the activities that are done, those are all being done for Krishna. So we see all the actual mechanical elements of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are being used in Krishna's service. That's what bhakti is. So, because it's the origin. In other words, we can see here is the origin of the 64 arts, of the rasas, of all the social structure, everything comes from the spiritual world. It's reflected here into the material world.
Yes.
Right? And then people use it here for their own. Now, if they want to use it in a progressive way that doesn't, you know, that they can elevate themselves and not bother others, then they'll use the Vedic system. And if they're not interested in that, they can avoid it. And as long as they situate themselves nicely in the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik, then you know they can move forward with those systems. But if they also don't understand the Pancharatrik and they don't use the Vedic, so unless they're sitting down chanting and being absorbed in Krishna, then there's not much there to work with to elevate themselves. Right? So that's why all three systems are there. The core is the Bhagavat, then it's supported by the Pancharatrik, which is also transcendental, and that's supported by the Vedic, which brings in all the culture, community, economics, all the things that, you know, we'll say is practical and all these things and like that. Does that make sense? So, yes, it does come from it is defined in the Kama Shastra. That's where it'll be seen from. But the point is it's about how to engage the senses nicely in a way that elevates the senses, that brings it up to Krishna, just like in the theatricals. The drama that you perform has to elevate the consciousness.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just mundane, right? It'll degrade. Same with singing. What you sing about, the music, should be to elevate the consciousness. Same with the instruments, same with the dancing, same with the painting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like that. So that's the whole point, is all these arts, if they're done to elevate the consciousness, you know, that's the purpose of the Vedic, then there's the regulation and all that, then it's there. Then you use it for Krishna. Now that's the actual position. That's the perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Okay, the 9, art of applying preparations for cleansing the teeth, clothes, and painting the body. Right? So art of applying preparations for clean, you know, how you put them, like how you put it for your teeth, because you can't just in any way put it. There's so rules on how you put it that makes it work. Right? So then for cleansing the teeth, clothes, and painting the body. Because if you put too much, too little, or you don't put it in the right way, it won't work so good. And that, and painting the body. So how to put it? So like you have before, the art of painting the face with colored unguents and that, like the designs, this and that, but there's also the technique of how you do it. You know, what kind of stick you use, how big is the stick, what do you keep the unguent in, how much you stick the stick into the unguent, you know, what's the shape of the stick, that it holds it or not, you know, these kind of things. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Then the art of making the groundwork of jewels. So how you make the, means how jewels are connected to something, right? I want to put the jewel in the ring. How does that go in that the jewel will stay? Or if I want to put it in the crown and I want to do different things, and what you do is like, if I want to inlay the marble table or the stone table with jewels, how do I do that? How does that fit in there? It's not just you dig in your hole and stick it in with super glue. You know, you want to put it in the way, that way then they last hundreds of years. You see, nowadays they make jewelry and then sometimes after a very short time they start falling apart. But you see, there's some of these old jewelries that are hundreds and hundreds of years old or even more, and they still are working because they just know better how to put these things together. The art of covering the bed. You know, how you're going to set the bed up, how you're going to cover it, make it look nice, make it look attractive, right? Because the whole point is it should look nice, right? Because then if it looks nice, it's septic and all that, then one, it creates a nice atmosphere for the room. It adds the aspect of aesthetics. It's done nicely. It's clean. It's organized. It adds the mode of goodness. So it doesn't add ignorance to the room, because the bed, you go and you sleep. Right, so if I just leave this messy bed, then it creates a mood of ignorance in the room. Right, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the point. First thing when you get up in the mornings, you make the bed. One is by it being made, it's harder to sleep on. Right, and even if you do come back and lay down, you can't get as serious as you can when you're in the bed and everything. You know, so at least for your sadhana, it works better. like that. Does that make sense? But just making it attractive. So here we sing 64 hours for Radha and Krishna, how to make a nice bed, make it attractive and all that, so that it's nice to come and sit, you're comfortable to sit on. Because if it's dirty and funky, you don't know what anything is or what to touch, like this and that. You know, blankets all crumpled up over here, the pillows, you know, piled up over there. You know, you don't, you know, like that. But if it's all nicely done and everything, like you see in the fancy hotels and that, they always try to do, you know, make the bed look so it looks very attractive, like that. 12, art of playing on music in water. I'm not sure, so art of playing on music in water, or art of playing music in water, or on water, something I'm not sure here, because this I think is taken from the retranslating or re-editing the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's English, so his would be very exact on what he's trying to do. You'd have to look at the purports to see. But there's a way you can, either that, or I think when Prabhupada is talking about it in Krishna book, he's talking about the Jala Taranga, how to play, the art of playing music with water, right? That makes sense. So you have these bowls, and they're a particular kind of bowl that rings very well. I think they're generally, at least traditionally, I think they're bell metal. And then you put in a certain amount of water, you'll get a certain note. So then they can tune them perfectly, and then they line them up, and then they play them. It's called Jala Taranga. You know, they can play on them like that, and it gets very nice sounds. So it's one of the arts. That's what Prabhupada says here. Because otherwise, you can sing while you're in the water. You do have that happen. Like at Radhakund, sometimes all the gopis will be in the water, and then they'll sing a song for Krishna. And then they'll pat the water, you know, for beat and everything like that, and then sing at the same time. So whether it has that both those meanings, or if it means just the Jala Taranga. But in any case, it means water and music go well together. Right? Like that. Then 13, the art of splashing with water. Because then the point is that if you're splashing, and that you're trying to get water on another person. And if you just splash indiscriminately, it may get there or not, or it may just be overwhelming, or you may get other people like that. So there's a way how you can splash, and it specifically goes at the person. So then if you have a water fight, like we would see that sometimes after the Rasa dance, then Krishna and the gopis would go into the Jamuna and they might have a water fight. Right? So there's a way of you splashing and all of that. So you don't have, in other words, you don't have to be super strong to splash, you know, because some of the times the boys just take the arm and go like this and just make a big waves and all that. And it is effective, you know, like that. But at the same time, as the gopis aren't going to do that, they're going to splash very specifically, so that the water will go directly at Krishna where they want to hit him, like that. So that kind of art, it's in there. Or you see Krishna and the cowherd boys, when they go into the Jamuna and all that, I'm sure that there's going to be water fights there. And so then, you know, just how it's done, so that it's, the idea is that if it's about rasa, these things should bring about and be pleasing for rasa. Right here, we just do it. Like the hotel does it nice because you like it, then you're going to pay come back again and they'll get more money. Does that make sense? But here it's about pleasing Krishna, that the design of the bed is nice, or the different, you know, how the decorations are nice, or, you know, the music and all that is to enhance Krishna's relationship with the devotees. Right? That exchange between him and the devotees. So these are the basis of expressing that rasa. Then you're going to have the techniques of what each one is, how it works and everything. But the point is that each one will bring out a particular thing. It makes it inviting. You go and sit on the bed, you know, or somehow you cover it with flowers. It makes it inviting. So it's very nice. It's nicely fragrant. Then Krishna and the gopis can sit there very nicely. You know, so that, plus flowers are very soft. So you can make the bed out of flowers. Or you have a bed and you cover it, with cloths and flowers or whatever it is that you're doing to make it nice. But in any case, is to create a nice environment for Krishna, right? Like that, or they're wearing the jewelry. The jewelry is nice. It brings out different moods. It brings out different things. It brings out the attractiveness. So that is done nicely, and how to put it together so it'll be refined and all that. The gopis can wear it. Krishna can wear it. And it enhances that mood of interaction. We see Mother Yashoda. She likes to be always making new ornaments for Krishna and everything. She's always doing stuff because she mentions, oh, she's going to be busy doing this or doing that. And so, she tells Krishna she's going to be busy doing this. So, he should take care of himself or, just be comfortable and everything like that. And so these things are going on. It's where some Mother Yashoda is taking care by getting nice things to dress Krishna nicely. The gopis are knowing these things so they can make and they can look nice and attractive for Krishna. Does that make sense? So all these arts come back to the aspect of the rasa between Krishna and the devotees. The art of practically applying an admixture of colors. Right, so practically applying how you're going to do. So you see that these things here is just given in, that there are all these things are there, but you can see is that they have groups where they support each other. Some of them are common, so one art may be used in two or three different categories of where it's not like, the theatricals, you're going to have makeup. So you're going to be using some of these other arts and that's going to be there. How you're going to put the colors, how they're going to do, how they make their makeup, so they look particular and things like that. So it'll be there. It'll be the gopis who use it to decorate their face or look nice for Krishna, or they're helping someone else and they put it on for the other person. Yeah? Okay. 15, art of designing a preparation of wreaths, right? So garlands, how to make garlands, how to make wreaths, for decoration. So how to decorate with garlands, how to make them for wearing and that, because it's a whole thing. We don't see so much we make for the deities. Simple, put the flowers together, but you can also make all the different colors and different kinds of flowers. You can tie them in different ways to get different thicknesses or different things like that. And even we see in the Vedic, like in South, they use string, but they don't use a needle. They tie the flowers together. So there's a technique for that, or you can use the needle, and then there's a technique for that. And then how they hang them, you can hang them, like they'll do a wall of flowers by hanging the garlands right next to each other, but they might do a design on the bottom, or, some longer, or how they do the colors on the garlands, different colors, and then they'll make the patterns of the colors on each individual strand of garland will be an overall design, all these different things they can do. 16, art of practically setting the coronet on the head, right? So how to set a crown on the head that, one, it looks nicely and doesn't fall off, right? Because it's, you can't walk around all day holding on to your clothes. Yeah, hi, how are you today? Shake hands. Okay, 1 second here. Okay. Yeah, hi, good to meet you. Like that. Yeah, okay. So as I was saying, like that. No, you're not going to do that. They have to be able to do it so it stays. You have to know what goes with what, whether, all these different things. 17, art of practically dressing in the tiring room. Right? How do you put clothes on? How do they work? How do they drape and everything? Remember, it was in Vrindavan, in the 70s, then you had one devotee there, Omkar Prabhu. He was the head pujari in Vrindavan. And so in his background, one of the things he did when he was younger was he worked on, I think I know how you say it properly, something like Champs-Élysées. Did I say it right?
Champs-Élysées.
Champs, yeah. You can't say the P. You don't know which ones you say, which one. Basically, it's whatever's the word half of the last half you drop. Yeah. So he lived there. His family lived there. And, when he was young, he would go down and to all these shops there, all the fashion houses and that there. In the window, they would always have, the mannequins that are all dressed to show off their things. So he used to go down there and dress those mannequins. So he was very expert at dressing mannequins for those shops that are there. So those are all the big houses. So in other words, he was on a level that he could dress the mannequins that would be pleasing to, those who are running those shops that represented those houses of couture, like that. So he was, in other words, he was good. And that's what he just did as a kid, as a teenager. Then some point later, then he joined Krishna consciousness. Now he could use that to dress the deities like that. And so then, so you'd have that nice thing. So he knew cloth, because he was once a apprentice. It is about knowing how cloth works, what you can put it on, what effect you can get, how it's great, because it's not just you just throw it on. It's that you have to know how you put it on, that it works. It does what you want it to do. It looks nice. It won't fall off. Does that make sense? So, and how to practice, or you have the thing of just like Srila Prabhupada show when they go out, let's say with the devotees to bathe in the Ganga, how to take your clothes off and put on your clothes that you use for bathing without standing there with no clothes on. And then how after bathing to dry yourself off and then change from the clothes that you were wearing and put on your regular clothes. And you can do it right there in public with people standing all around you, because everybody's there and they're all just doing so different things like that. Just how to use cloth, how to put on cloth, how to wear the cloth, how, how, and just, yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. 18, the art of decorating the tragus of the ear. So how all the different things around the ear, how they can be decorated, right? Because you have the main one here, then you have, there's a little, how you say, this point here, there's a little round point, then that's that one, how something goes there, and how things go up here, and stuff like that. And, how you work with these things. So all those aspects. And then 19, art of practical application of aromatics, right? So nice fragrances and that, how you practically put them on so that they do work for giving the fragrance. And, you don't make a mess of your clothes. You don't do anything like this and that. There's a whole art to it, right? The art means it's a practical application of something. Then you have the theory, is how it works behind, right? Maybe the time. But if you know the art and don't know the theory, it's just called art, right? If you know the theory and the art and you can combine the two, that's called science, right? So what's given in the Shastra is the science. Some Shastras may just talk about the art, but generally they mention the theory and the science and all that. But here it's just the gopis know these things because it's for Krishna. So what are the technical points? Is that how much technicality is useful for pleasing Krishna? That much you know. And what's beyond is nice for scholars, but it's not necessary in pleasing Krishna, that they don't bother. But you see, when they come here to the material world, then all these gopis can get very technical about things. But generally, they only discuss the technical points when it comes to the philosophy. Right. So then 20, the art of applying or setting ornaments. So just like you set the crown, how you put the ornament on, how you set it on, or how you set the ornaments, it means we all made the groundwork of jewels, how you put the jewel in, how it's, because there's a way you put it in. You can't just put it in anyway. Particular way they put it in, the way they close it, the way they deal with it, the way they polish it. It's a whole thing. It's like if you have the guys at a jewelry shop, there's so many guys that are there going to sell you stuff that's already been made. And then, but if you want anything technical, then they bring in a guy. You're talking about doing some design work. They bring in the guy that designs it, that knows these arts of how to set and do the different things. And then he says, oh, we can do this and that. Then, because in the Vedic, the jeweler would now make the background for the jewel. You show the jewel, they measure the jewel. You keep the jewel. You don't give it to them. Then they make the ring or they make the ornaments and all that. And then when it's ready, then you come, bring the jewels. Then you go and sit with the guy who sets it. Then he comes, he puts it in, he does the things, he gets it all down, makes it all nice like that and everything. And then once that's done, then they weigh it, right? They weighed your jewel like that, but they only weigh the gold like that after they've set it, because they have to cut some off, they file it, they this, that, kind of thing. So it's all done at the end. So applying, you know, how you're going to put them on, how you're going to set them, all these different things. Because how you're going to put it on is also is how you're going to set it in. Because you have to know, if you don't know how it's going to sit on the body, you don't know how to put the jewel in. Otherwise, you put it in, it's stiff, it won't bend, it doesn't have flexibility and all that. So the higher grade ones are the ones that can move the body. Yes? No? Okay. Okay, so end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bhagavad Hari Bhagavad, Jai Nitai, Jai Nitai.